This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. Happy Friday to everybody. Hopefully, everybody's having a great day, getting set for a big weekend. And hopefully, it's a big weekend for our beloved Seattle Mariners, who are in Houston to take on the Astros.
The hated Astros.
Ugh.
Yeah, you know, well, we'll get to it later. But I'm kind of worried. A little bit worried. You look at some of the numbers for some of their better hitters that aren't really happening, and you're like, yeah, they're kind of due.
Yeah, you just feel it's a matter of time. But we'll talk about that. Coming up on the show, Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times will join us at 3 o'clock. Stay tuned for that. 3:30, we'll do best of the rest. We've got Mean Text today. We've got a short show because the Mariners are in Houston. So we'll turn you over to the pregame show coming up at 4 o'clock. So we'll do Mean Text at 3:45. You can start texting those in now to 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company.
Yeah, and our producer today, Brady Robick, said, go ahead and take shots at me. He instructed me.
I'm always fair game. It's just I'm never here for it.
Okay.
I'm never here enough for people to roast me.
Yeah. Well, now you've given them carte blanche, so buckle up.
Take your shots. Go for it.
Yeah. He kind of looks like Emerson Hancock. That's one thing about him.
That's a compliment, though. That's not even mean.
No. Yeah. Maybe they'll say that you're some kind of jacked up Emerson Hancock.
Well, I didn't make it, so you're right.
Brady, I don't think, would get too mad at anything anybody says. He was letting Matt Nelson tape things to his hat. And
that was the best hat I've ever worn.
And he just sat there smiling. Matt's all proud of what he was putting on his hat.
You're talking about the ass hat.
That's exactly right. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
he had a Seattle Mariner and an S, and somehow Matt put AS in front of it. Brady was happy with it.
And yeah, Matt was like, proud. Everybody won.
Yep.
Everybody won. And speaking of Matt, he's not been here for the past few days. It was his birthday this week.
Yeah.
So happy birthday to Matt. I don't know how old he is. I think he's 30, I think.
Well, maturity-wise.
12.
11.
11.
But I don't know what his actual age is. But I know that, speaking of immature, typically whenever Matt's picture ends up out on the water cooler, they put up, you know, birthdays and work anniversaries. I'll draw like a scar and, you know, black out his eyes.
You put a thought bubble up there.
Yeah.
I love me. Something like that.
I heart me.
I heart me. So happy birthday to Matt. I know he's not listening, but we wanted to put that out there anyway. So yeah,
you don't think Matt's listening to sports radio?
I'm just kidding. It's a bold assumption on my part, but I'm going with it. But again, Mean Text coming up at 3:45, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. In case you weren't tuned in when we had a chance to speak with John Schneider and Mike McDonald yesterday, first of all, that was really cool just to have them in the room at the same time. Our first chance to talk to Mike McDonald in person. Seems like a nice guy, kind of reserved. You know, it feels like maybe he's still kind of all taking it in. They're under the gun. He said a couple of times, like, yeah, we didn't get started as soon as you'd like to get started. Like, you know, it was a later start, obviously, because he hadn't been hired yet. So
they're in the playoffs. And
Yeah. So he maybe... There's a lot going on. Obviously, they just wrapped up the draft. They got to go through free agents. You got mini camp starting today, rookie mini camp. So a lot going on out there. But I don't know. My impression, he seemed like a really, really good guy, smart guy, just a little reserved.
Yeah. Well, man, he's 36.
I know.
I mean, 36
can't believe
years
we're the
old.
Same age.
I think yeah, I was like 4 years out of the league at that point, still trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I knew it wasn't media, that's for sure, at age 36. But no, it's interesting, all the things. And we got a quote from him, which I won't jump ahead here, but there's a lot of pressure for a guy as a head coach. And you know, it's kind of funny, I've thought about him as being a head coach, and then I remember, oh, that's right, it's John Harbaugh was the head coach.
Yeah.
He wasn't the head coach, but I mean, it just... All of a sudden, you see, you know, how he is in this situation, how he's handling it, and you can see that kind of the pressure that's building on. I mean, the sport is ridiculous. We talk about all the time about whether it's obviously the Super Bowl, the playoffs, the draft, the combine. Everybody loves the NFL. It's very closely paid attention to. And then the other thing is, is a tradition up here. And, you know, I thought the thing that he did the best was talking about we. He was like, yeah, we have had an awesome, you know, run here and our history and things like that. And so he just has entirely taken all of that in, and it's a big responsibility for him.
Yeah, and he's I'm excited to see what he does out there. So good to talk to both these guys. But a couple things that stood out, John talking about guys they had going into the draft that they wanted to go after and having to make trades all over the place potentially, and none of that really happened.
We knew we had groupings throughout the board, and we knew where we wanted to. Like, we had touch points, and we got to them. And, you know, we had a couple of times where we were going to move around. We didn't. We were going to move up. We didn't. You know, 16, we stayed, waited. Yeah, it didn't feel like a draft to be, like, trying to be, like, you know, the smartest guy in the room and trying to be moving all over the place.
Right.
You know, it felt like a draft, like, hey, we have buy-in with a new staff on these areas. Let's hit these areas and then grow from here.
Seemed like they were almost stunned that Murphy was there at 16. You know, and just the way it played out, the first 14 picks, all offensive players, and then the one defensive player taken, they weren't going to draft because of his medicals.
Layout too, yeah. Yeah, no question. I think they were really excited about that and probably had no idea that it would go that way. But and again, like you said, I mean, I loved Laiatu Latu. I thought he was fantastic. But the medical part of it, they're just never going to dabble in that area.
If he were totally healthy and he and Murphy were both there, would you have gone with him?
I would have. Yeah. I mean, just based on what he was, I mean, he's the most refined pass rusher by far that I've seen in a long time, as far as, you know, because, you know, a lot of times you look at these defensive ends and like a guy like Jared Verse, who the kid from Florida State, which I'm trying to remember where the Rams actually took him.
Great.
Yeah. But, you know, he's just powerful and fast, but he didn't have all the great moves and everything. And Latu had all of that. All of that. So, you know, and I think another interesting question would be, what if Penix was there at that point? You know, what they would have done. But I think, you know, they were going to go defense, and they thought he was the best defensive player. Now, does that mean he was the best, most productive? It's like, no, it's he had the best everything. Like, whether it was his measurables, his health, and then, you know, just the way he played, and then tip, you know, really, they needed it.
Yeah.
They really needed that guy. So I think it all came together for them. And he sounds like he's very happy about every one of the draft choices. But I think it's interesting that Christian Haynes has been, you know, pretty much accepted as being a really good pick in the second round.
Everybody seems to love it.
Yeah, but he's from UConn, and yeah, he played 49 games straight, but ran a 5.03 at the combine. I mean, everybody is okay with that, and I'm okay with it too. It's just interesting that you look at these, especially the two fourth rounders.
That's where the sticking point is.
Yeah,
for some.
A lot of people are worried about those two guys.
Again, we brought up Mike McDonald and talked about his new role as a head coach, and he sort of acknowledged that, you know, every action, every word, every interaction, you're being evaluated, you're being judged.
Of course, it's new. It's of course, and when you're getting ready for the process, you're getting, you know, there's a lot of advice that you're asking folks, and some of the most sage advice that I got was, hey, every interaction you're going to have throughout the building is probably going to be the most meaningful interaction for, like, that person. You know, like, they'll, you know, if it's an intern or whatever, they're going to go back to their wife or whatever and say, hey, like, I hung out with the head coach for a while today. Like,
yeah,
you know, that's a big, you know, so you want to, yeah, absolutely. You want to be intentional with your words and make sure that, you know, you're being uplifting and empowering and, you know, and reinforcing the values that, you know, that you're saying. So you're backing on, you know, you're walking the walk and talking the talk at the same time.
You know, what's interesting about that, I love that response because he did it in a way that didn't sound like it was cocky. It's just the truth. That's what it is. That's what he is going to be. And for him to be honest about that, like, yeah, he's basically saying, I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's true.
I don't know if you know who I am.
Yeah.
Many leather-bound books.
Yeah. But I think John broke that quote out later in the interview. But yeah, I mean, the good news also is that they have the same sense of humor, it seems like. So that's a good thing. He'll understand the leather-bound books.
The movie references will be great.
But I just thought that was very, like, mature of him to, you know, say, yeah, this is really, and that's why the pressure, and that's why maybe he's a little bit subdued right now. He's still trying to figure it out. Everything's new for him. You know, the press conference, being scouted as a head coach, and then this will be, you know, everything's a first. And so he's just trying to figure out how to handle it. But I just think he's a very reserved guy, but he's very direct with his words and what he means. So hopefully that, you know, and that's what John says about him, is that he's such a great teacher. Mm-hmm. And that's something that they were looking for, because I think, you know, explaining things and getting guys playing all on the same page takes a lot.
Who was, when you were playing, who was the young buck head coach? Who was, like, were they in their 30s? I feel like it's... I always felt maybe because I was a kid, I was looking at every coach as old, and maybe there were some in their 30s, but it feels like it's more common now. You know, with McVay was in his early 30s when he became the head coach. He's 36.
McDonald's 36.
I mean, yeah. I don't remember that back in the 90s, but maybe it was happening and I just felt like everybody was old.
No, I don't know. I think age was a big part of it. I mean, remember who's our Miller Lite guy, John, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name.
Miller Lite.
No, I'm talking about the video game, for God's sake. Coach of the Raiders, John Madden. My God, how can I forget John Madden's name? I love John Madden. He was 30. He was 30 when he got that job as head coach.
Even.
And that was like in the 70s.
He didn't look 30. He looked older.
I know he did. Yeah, it's funny when you think back on that. But I think, for the most part, you're getting more younger coaches, and some of these guys, especially coming out of that whole McVay tree, which kind of is, you know, him and, you know, Kyle Shanahan and some of the other guys, the
guy Staley,
Green Bay.
McDonald.
I think, you know, that's becoming more of a thing. But I think, you know, the relatability to the players is something that's probably a little bit of a boost there. And then, but you're right. Back then, it was very rare. Like, John Madden being a 30-year-old head coach in the NFL was just totally unheard of.
Man. As far as Mike McDonald goes, now he's a head coach and instead of a coordinator, and talked about the difference in that draft room being the head coach as compared to being the coordinator.
Well, I mean, it's a work in progress since the day you walk in the door of where we're at, where we want to go. It's a lot of conversation between John and I and really everybody else on the building of who we have and, you know, the direction we want to take it and then what's out there. So it's this kind of this ongoing evolution of the roster building and the draft process. And to answer your question, we just got started a little bit later than you normally would, you know, as a coaching staff. So, but it was awesome, man, getting used to a different process and understanding it and having trust in the people that have been here for such a long time. It was awesome to get to understand how it works, you know. So you're just, it's eyes open and you're just listening. It's doing a lot of listening about what guys are saying about guys and see how we can get aligned and create consensus. And I think that's where we ended up.
I feel like some of these questions he could have been like, guys, I don't really know yet because I haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
I mean, we're taking each thing. Everything's going to be new for me in this perspective. So, and I'm sure, you know, his eyes are being opened to like how much he has to do. I mean, it's mostly what you're doing is you're handling your staff and making sure that they're doing it right. But he's probably so used to being hands-on, being the defensive coordinator. I'm very curious to see what'll happen when Dirty and, you know, him install the defenses. Is it going to be just a defensive coordinator, or is Mike McDonald going to be in those rooms talking about their defense and how they run it?
I hope he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same.
I hope he's hands-on. And that's not, you know, commentary on Dirty or anything, but this is about what we saw in Baltimore, saw how adept he was with the defense, how good it was. I want that in there. And now maybe this guy's a clone of him and does exactly as he would do. I don't know, but I think I'd feel more comfortable if he were
involved. Too. And I remember at the end of, you know, when Pete was there, we were kind of clamoring for him to get back involved with the defense because we knew it was kind of his baby for a while there. And then he kind of turned it over to other people. And so, I'm totally with you on that. I'm like, I want this to come from Mike McDonald because his defense was fantastic.
Now, we brought this up to open the show. Mariners are on the road taking on the Houston Astros tonight. And the Astros are at the bottom of the division record-wise, but this is a team that's won four of their last five games. Now, some of them were against the Rockies, but they're winning. They pounded the Guardians last night.
That worries me.
Guardians are a good team, and I'm looking at it, and I was looking at Alvarez, who was 0 for 5 last night, and I went back and looked at his game log. He's 0 for 17. He has not had a hit in his last four games. Alex Bregman is 1 for his last 13. And as much as I have distaste and dislike for the Astros, these are two very good players. And you just expect that at some point they're going to become who they're supposed to be. And I don't want that to happen against the Mariners. No. And then meanwhile, you throw in, Altuve's hitting 354 or 352 with seven home runs, and he's Altuve again. It almost scares me more that Yordan is 0 for his last four games. Like, this dude's going to break out somewhere, man. Don't let it be in this series.
Yeah, same. And, you know, as good of a year is that Altuve is having, I was listening to C. Raj on the way in and on Bump and Stacy. He was filling in for Bump, and he was talking about how those seven home runs that Altuve hit were solo home runs.
Yeah.
And if you look at his
I think he's only got, 11 runs driven in or 10?
Yeah. He's got his runners in scoring position numbers, 191. And both him and Alvarez are huge problems that way, because Alvarez is crushing it. And, you know, he's 244, but he's 172 with runners in scoring position. So, I mean, those guys in clutch situations, they're not hitting as well. But, I mean, both those guys are pretty clutch. So that's the thing that kind of worries you, that's they're probably sitting there thinking, okay, kind of like what we're talking about Julio, and Julio's going to get going. He's going to get home runs. He's going to do damage. They're probably thinking that about their entire offense because, like you said, Bregman is just too good of a hitter. Now, he's pretty decent. He's 276 with runners in scoring position, but his 200 average it's horrible for him.
Yeah.
He's having a terrible year.
I was having the debate with our guy Brent in there, who thinks he's not a very good player. And I'm like, yeah. I can't believe I'm in a position to defend Bregman. I can't stand the dude, but I think he's a good player.
I heard the conversation, and I know it was very painful for you, because you were like, I think he's a pretty good player. It's almost like, somebody else was saying it for you.
Don't make me say this, Brent. Yeah. Don't make me defend this guy. But
he's the most hateable Houston Astro.
Yeah, his face. Yeah.
It's just his face. Well, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just something about your face. Yeah, I just want to punch it.
It's just driving me nuts. I haven't heard a word you've said.
You don't change your face.
He's 30. Maybe he's losing his skills. That's not going to hurt my feelings if that becomes true. I'm very leery of this team because they're feeling good about themselves. Again, they just hammered Cleveland. They've won 4 of 5. Their record still looks bad, but they're starting to turn it around. If they could wait 3 games before they do that.
Well, and then the matchup, pitching matchup, obviously we got George Kirby, and you always think, hey, we're gonna roll through this one. But Ronel Blanco, man, he's the only guy in Major League Baseball with a no-hitter
in his first start of the season.
Yeah, and he's 3-0, 1.65 ERA. And I was looking at some of his numbers on his opponent batting average, 144. So, and opponent slug is 207. So yeah, he's just dealing right now. So I mean, look, what would be satisfactory for you? I mean, you want to win the series, but I don't know I feel like if they take one down there, I'll be okay with it, because I feel like this team is their position to explode right now.
Yeah.
Sorry to say that.
I'm still clinging to win the series. I think Houston's not fixed. They feel like they're starting to turn it around. I don't think they're fixed. And I think they can still be had. Yes, they're at home. They're feeling good about themselves, but they got guys scuffling just like the Mariners do. So I don't know. Win the series. If they lose the series of the Astros, that is really going to bother me.
I'm setting myself up for a very happy weekend.
Okay,
I'll be easily satisfied with one win.
One win, you're happy. All right,
especially if it's tonight.
Yeah. All right. We'll see what happens. Again, we'll turn you over to the pregame show coming up at 4 o'clock. Right now, let's take two.
Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes was on the Impulsive with Logan Paul podcast, and he guaranteed a three-peat for the Chiefs in the Super Bowl this year.
How about that? Guaranteeing, that doesn't seem like his character, does it? Go out there and call. Yeah, we're gonna win our third in a row this year.
I mean, I was watching that quarterback documentary. It had Kirk Cousins and him.
Was it Netflix?
Yeah, I think it was a Netflix series, and it's a little more cocky than you would think. I think he does a good job of putting out there a guy who's very humble and, just a good football player and really easy to like. But I don't know. Logan Paul, did he maybe kind of have something to do with it?
Hyping him up a little bit?
I don't know.
I read it. And I'm like, really? That doesn't... I mean, obviously, I don't know Patrick Mahomes. It just seemed out of character. I figured if he was going to say something along those lines, it'd be like, hey, I love our team this year. I think we've got as good a chance as we've had in any year, so I wouldn't be surprised. Or just to say, yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to three-peat. I was like, well, okay.
Pulling a Joe Namath.
Yeah, yeah.
Guarantee it.
Very cocky.
The NBA is investigating an incident on Thursday night after Milwaukee Bucks guard Patrick Beverley threw a ball at an Indiana Pacers fan for allegedly saying Cancun on three while they were in the huddle.
Yeah, so that is to mean they are eliminated, they're going on vacation, headed to Cancun, and we were watching the video today where he fired a ball, hit a girl in the side of the head, and a guy that was next to her, around her, picked the ball up and kind of soft-tossed it back to Beverley, who then fired a fastball back at that guy again after he'd already hit the girl in the head. And you're going, and his teammates are like kind of like pulling him back. What are you doing? And then after the game, I showed you the video of him talking to reporters, and he wouldn't speak to one reporter because she didn't subscribe to his podcast, saying, I'm sorry, you don't subscribe to my podcast. Can you get your mic out of here? And he's like shoving her mic away. And
yeah, he was. Yeah, I don't think he made physical contact with her, but he was shoving the mic out of his face.
He apparently called her and apologized. She sent out a tweet saying, hey, he apologized and I accept it. Bottom line, he's been this guy his whole career. He's a jackass.
I had never heard Cancun on three before. Sorry. Is that a thing in the NBA?
Yeah, it's like your season's over. See you. Enjoy your vacation.
If you're there and that girl who got hit in the head is either your sister or your wife or whatever, I'm going.
You're
going
to have a word.
In. Yeah. I'm all in.
Yeah, you're going to have a word.
He would get tackled.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's just been that guy. He's just been this guy throughout his career. You know, I was talking to Brady about it. I think you heard it. At one point, he got mad at Chris Paul. They were playing each other, and he got mad at him about something. Paul had his back completely turned to him, walking down the court, and he comes running up, two-hand chuck in the back. Dude's not even looking. I'm like, how cowardly is that?
It's a cheap shot.
Yeah, and he's always been this guy. So, good riddance. Enjoy your vacation, Patrick. All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife, swedish.org/cyberknifeprostate. Coming up, our last round of Seahawks draft profiles. We're going to get into that coming up next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob on Seattle Sports.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, our buddy Bob Condotta from the Seattle Times will join us on the program, talk some Seahawks football with him, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Again, we've got a short show today. We'll be done at 4 o'clock, turn you over to the pregame show. We'll do Mean Text at 3:45, so get those going, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Just be creative. If you're new to the program, that's all we ask is just be creative.
Brady said he doesn't know much about our listeners, but he gets the feeling just in general that they're idiotic. That's what he told me.
That's my general consensus.
Yeah.
Well, if I listen to you, I'll just call them stoners.
Stoners, drunk, unemployed. Just Lefko just goes right in and calls them stupid.
By the way, yeah, they're just dumb. Go ahead and take shots at Brady.
Yeah, he doesn't mind. He doesn't mind.
He loves it.
All right. We've been going through each draft pick one by one, doing a preview. And again, by we, I mean Dave Wyman's been looking at the particulars for each of these guys. We talked about the first guard, Christian Haynes. Everybody seems very excited about him, sort of universally praised. Great pick. This is a guy they took later, obviously, in the draft in the sixth round. How do you say his name, Dave?
Sataoa Lamea.
Out of Utah.
Yes.
I'll trust you on that. But let's play his...
I wouldn't trust me.
Let's play his draft call here.
This is Josh from the Seahawks. Is this Tala?
Yes, this is Tala.
Hey, this is Josh from the Seahawks. You ready to stop waiting and come up to Seattle?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we're going to take you here at 179, all right?
Yes, sir. That sounds good to me.
You down there with your family?
Yes, sir. I am down here with my family.
We're excited to bring you up here to Pacific Northwest, dude, okay? We got Satao coming up here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I hope you all ready because I'm ready.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to pass you off to the head coach real quick. He wants to say hi, okay? Here's the head coach.
Satao. up?
You excited?
Yes, sir. I'm excited.
All right. I can hear your voice, kind of.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. That's awesome.
Saltawa.
What's up?
Saltawa Lamea. He didn't seem very excited. He wasn't very fired up.
Here's your new head coach, Saltawa.
What's up?
They had a couple of guys like that that we've heard that were kind of, because I think there's three times where either Mike McDonald or John goes, are you excited? Because they don't sound excited.
Well, I like how he said, I can hear it in your voice, sort of.
Yeah.
I would feel like I'd be going nuts. Like, oh, I can't wait to get there. Thanks so much for believing in me, coach. I'm looking forward to it. Just some enthusiasm. You know, maybe I'm sure it's overwhelming at that point that it's real.
Maybe because it's the sixth round and you're like, okay.
Yeah, maybe he thought he should have gone earlier.
You know what? Agents will tell you, you know, which my agent was very, very conservative about it. He's like, there's a outside chance it would be the back part of the first round, but mostly it's second, maybe third. So, and I was a second rounder, somewhere right in the middle, basically. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's maybe he just expected it. But guys, 6'4", 305 pounds. He's played 49 straight starts. And you know, you look at the difference, he's played a little bit of offensive tackle. And so it's kind of like almost 50-50, I think it is, as far as playing guard and tackle.
Looks like your numbers here, 19 right guard, 25 right tackle.
Yeah. So pretty close. I know the one thing about him is that he likes it inside. That's what, when they talk to him, like he likes to play on the interior part. He's a guard. And so now all of a sudden you look at the Seahawks and, you know, look at their roster and it's starting to look good on the interior offensive line. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least you have choices. That's for sure. So yeah, he's a really good player at Utah. I mean, he was all Pac-12 in some capacity, whether it's first team, second team, honorable mention, 4 years there. So, and he was all Pac-12 his senior year, I think, or maybe it was 2022, but yeah, one of those years, all Pac-12, and a guy that now all of a sudden, you look at him and you go, hey, look, you're going to add him to a bunch of other guys, like, you know, the guys that they signed in the off season. And now all of a sudden guard looks really good. One of the things that John said, and I wrote this in the notes, that I'll explain what a phone booth is, but you know, coaches used to say that, like, this guy's phone booth tough, meaning, mm-hmm. like, in a small space, this guy can win a battle. And that's what they're talking about with him. And by the way, a phone booth, it was about 8 feet tall, 4x4, made of glass, had, like, an accordion window that opened up and door, and then
you took coins,
yeah, pocket full of quarters. But, yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that inside he can just win toe-to-toe battles, you know.
Here's John quickly talking about what it is they liked about him.
What do we like about him? He's huge. He's tough. Really aggressive. Again, you guys hear this all the time. We're like, boy, I can't believe he was still available. Like, that was one of those guys. Like, okay, you're waiting. And it's like, keeps coming. And, you know, he's been primarily a right side player. He's played right guard, right tackle. But size, length, you know, again, another dude that had a really nice Senior Bowl week. And, competed at a high level. So, and Dave said he had a really fun press conference with you guys. So it's great.
So there you go. There's the first look. And then moving on to the next guy, DJ James, a guy they went with another cornerback out of Auburn. Here's the draft call.
Yo, DJ, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Hey, what's up? See y'all.
Man, thank you for calling, and I've been waiting on y'all. Thank you.
Yes, sir. How you feel about being a Seahawk, brother?
I can't wait. I'm ready to get to work.
Yes, sir. Can't wait to have you, bro. Congrats.
Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hold on. I'm going to introduce you to the head coach, Mike Madonna. Easy.
Okay.
We got quite a few more Tigers in here.
Got a good one.
Hey, Case got our DB coach. He's going to be upset. He coached Alabama. He'll be all right.
That's my guy.
Hey, that's awesome, man. Congrats.
Thank you so much.
Good? You hanging in there? It's a long day.
That's a long day. Thank you.
Yeah.
a lot of noise in that one.
Lots of people there. It's kind of funny. I wrote, you know, he kind of went the opposite of Bo Nix. He started off at Oregon and then went to Auburn. Bo Nix started at Auburn, went to Oregon. But 24 passes broken up, 5 interceptions. Some people had him as a second-round grade, so it was kind of a surprise that he was there. But 4.42 40 at the combine, and he's a versatile guy. I think he can play inside at nickel. So, yeah, just another guy, 6'1", 175, that is a good cover guy that's versatile there.
All right, taking a look at the final draft pick. I think you might have referred to him as a project here, Michael Jarrell, and another tackle, another addition to the line. Here's his draft call.
Hello.
Hey, is this Michael?
Good, Michael.
Hey, Michael, John Schneider with the Seattle Seahawks. How you doing, buddy?
Doing good. How you doing?
Good, man. You had a great visit. We're getting ready to select you right here at 207, okay?
Oh,
yeah, for real.
Yeah,
congratulations, man.
Thank you.
See you from Michael, y'all.
Yeah,
buddy. We're excited for you, man.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'm glad to be a part of y'all. Yeah, let's go.
All right. Here, I'm going to give you your head coach, Mike McDonald, okay?
All right.
All right. All right, Michael. You ready, man?
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah, let's get it going.
You excited?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm excited. Yes, sir.
How's your day been? Pretty long, huh?
It's been going good. Me and my family, we've just been sitting here watching the draft.
That's great.
You know, just hoping to see my name called.
Heck yeah, man. You're about to see it. It's coming out soon.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Awesome. Thank y'all.
See, he's excited. I like that.
Well, at first he was, because he was like, what do you want?
Yeah, it was kind of surprised. Like, yeah, John with the Seattle Seahawks. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to select you. What? No bleep.
This guy's interesting, man. He played in Division II at Finley. Not familiar with the program, Bob. He's 6'4", 310 pounds. Guy plays pissed off. He really does. He's nasty. He's an offensive tackle. But, yeah, this guy is a project because he played in Division II. And if you look at the competition, like, it looks like, first of all, he's the pancake king. He knocks everybody down. On, I would say, 90% of his highlights, he is knocking somebody on the ground. But when you look at who it is, they look like high school defensive ends.
Yeah,
you
know, a little mismatched.
6 foot, 200-pound guys. You know, you always say when you play a weaker team, you should crush them, beat them 50-0. And a lot of people will say, well, you beat a crappy team. But like, yeah, you did to them what you should have done.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he's doing to these defensive ends in his league. But yeah, like I said, 90% of the clips that I saw, he's knocking somebody to the ground. And he's just very nasty. But I mean, this guy is raw and he hasn't played at this position. I think it's going to be one of the more interesting guys to watch in this draft because they took a chance on him. They probably, you know, maybe some people would think that they could have got him in free agency, but they wanted to take a shot at him, and I like it. I like what I heard there, and like I said, I feel like he's done everything out on the field that he should do. Another really quick thing before we go to break. He talked a lot about how loyal he was to the Finley football program because he said, I'm not going to chase NIL or Power 5 rankings. I don't want anybody to think that I'm the player that I am because of another coach. Mm-hmm. He said, I love the coaching staff here. I'm loyal to them. I want them to see that, you know, that I'm a guy from Finley and that they took a chance on me. And so I'm going to pay him back by staying here instead of getting in the transfer portal. So yeah, I really like that about him. I mean, it's just the loyalty, that part of it. It's a great story. And so I think for a lot of people watching this year, it's going to be fun to watch Michael Jarrell.
He's a man of character. I like it. All right. There you go. A little draft preview, taking a look at each one of those draft picks. Coming up, what's bugging Bob, Dave, Brady, Wyatt? We'll find out. That's next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
What's bugging Bob?
It could be traffic.
Hey.
It might be Angels fans.
I hate you. I don't even know you.
And it's definitely Stephen A. Smith.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
It's time to find out what's bugging Bob.
What's bugging Bob, presented by Issaquah Pest Control. A reminder coming up at 3 o'clock, Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times will join us on the program, so make sure you stay tuned for that. We don't have our guy Matt Nelson here, who usually kicks things off because he's a gold medal complainer. He's a world champion, but he's celebrating his, I don't know, 30th, 31st, 29th. I'm not sure how old he is, but somewhere in there. I think it's 30. Celebrating his birthday this week.
Interesting looking at the age. We were just talking during the break about people were texting in, well, Bill Cowher and who is it, Don Shula?
Al Davis.
I don't know about that. But, I mean, when those guys were coaches, they looked old to me. I mean, I think Bill Cowher's like 6 years older than me, 7 years older than me. So, I don't know. I just didn't think of those guys as being, but the texter was right.
Yeah.
I think Bill Cowher was 35 or 36 when he started coaching.
But they all looked, even looking at pictures of them back then, and you look at them, if you said, how old do you think that guy is? You'd say, I don't know, 41, 42, somewhere in there.
50-something.
They didn't look at it, whereas you look at McDonald. Mike McDonald looks really young, especially when you're sitting next to him. He looks very young. Sean McVay looks young. Staley looks young. They all look their age. John Madden didn't look 30.
Well, I won't speak for you, Bob, but we've gotten older. So that's the problem, because I remember looking. So I was texting my buddies at Stanford. So when I was at Stanford, Jack Elway was the last coach I had. Loved Jack. Passed away 25 years ago, but Jack was just the greatest. But Jack looked like he was like 65, 70 years old. And I got one of our programs from back then. He was 52. And same thing with my linebacker coach, who I thought he was this old man. He was 32 at the time. So it's kind of the perspective that now.
Ancient 32-year-old.
Bob has not gotten older.
No, I'm.
But I have.
I've remained frozen. All right. Well, let's get into what's bugging us. Dave, let's start with you. How about that? Matt's not here, so we'll defer to you here.
Yeah, I got nothing but love for everyone. I really do. So, no, actually, you know, the one thing is that is always the case is people that just don't drive with any kind of purpose. Just
yeah.
And you know, I was behind a guy. My car is kind of lower, which is why I missed my truck where I could see up over. But I was behind a guy and I'm like, oh, man, there must be traffic going on. And of course, I was pinned in, so I couldn't get around him. And then finally, I kind of swerve over and the guy's driving 50 in a 60. Yeah, and I'm just sitting there going, yeah, and you look at the I always like to look at their faces.
Go, you're the problem.
Possibly give them the my I hate you look. But yeah, like a lot of times they're just
oblivious.
Along, like I don't want to be in my car.
Not a care in the world. Just going for a leisurely drive.
I'm not breaking the law except for the carpool lane sometimes going down to the VMAG. But I just drive efficiently.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like the more you can reach that out to. We have a microphone. Please listen.
At least do the speed limit.
Go at least the speed limit.
Yes. Goodness gracious. That's frustrating.
Yeah, but that just happened to me coming across the bridge today. And I was just like, I spent probably 2 or 3 minutes behind a guy that I could have gotten around. And, you know, but he was in the fast lane.
Of course he was. Of course he was. Mine was in the car the other day at the Mariner game, the final Mariner game. I always come down First Avenue. Come down and you can take a right there by the show box and pull into the Mariner garage. I always get there around the same time, fifth, when we're broadcasting from there after the game. Get down there around the fifth, sixth inning. It was the top. They were just entering the top of the sixth when I got onto First Avenue. And for some reason, every right turn, so if you wanted to go right on Edgar Martinez and go to the freeway, that was blocked off. You want to take that right by the show box, that was blocked off. And every street going back, I basically flipped around after sitting in traffic for what was 2.5 innings because it was the eighth inning by the time I flipped around and went back south to see if I could turn left somewhere to head back to the parking garage. I had no access to get to the garage. And I finally flipped back around, cut through this one part. There was one parking lot that had an outlet where that would put you out by the garage. The others were blocked off. There was a fence. So it was the only one. And I got there, and the game was over at that point. And everybody was coming out of the garage. And I was talking to the cop there. I'm like, hey, we're doing a show. The game's over. I got to get in there. Can I get through here? And she goes, no, you're just going to have to wait it out. And I was like, can I?
Did you tell her who you were?
Yeah, she didn't seem to care. I tried that. Do you know who I am? I have many leather-bound books. But, yeah, and then there was like a little parking lot that was empty off to the side. I said, well, can I park here? She goes, yeah, go ahead. And I parked there and I ran into the clubhouse. You and Lefko were already in there. I had all my gear with me and everything. Didn't unpack anything. Then I come back out after we do our show, and I had a $65 ticket sitting on my window. And I was like, you bleepity bleeping bleepity bleep. I was less than pleased.
I got an idea for you. Why don't you see if you can expense it?
I did see. I did pursue that, and it doesn't sound very hopeful, Dave. I was not filled with hope after that conversation. I'm not optimistic about it. But
let's say you worked for free the first maybe 15, 20 minutes of the show.
Well, the other thing, the barricades they had up all had the, you know, no turn, and it said 1 p.m. And I'm thinking, the game started at 12:40. So are you just using barricades that just had that sign on it and you didn't put them there at 1? Because I didn't get there at 1, but that would make no sense that you're blocking off all of those streets 20 minutes after the game starts. But they all said that. And it was so far south that I was almost back at the West Seattle Bridge trying to get to come back around. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, that's kind of a panicky moment, especially when you might be late for the show.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I've got 3.5 innings to work with here, and okay, traffic's slow, but I'll be fine. And next thing I know, it's like the bottom of the eighth. I'm like, what the hell is happening around here? I can't get anywhere near the garage. It was a nightmare. All right, there you go. What's Bugging Bob, presented by Issaquah Pest Control. We'll talk some Seattle Seahawks with our buddy Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. He's going to join us next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.